Hey YouTube, Captain Ron here for Tony Sweet on Truth Be Told. We are at the 50th anniversary of MUFON here in Irvine, California, and we've got a local Irvine resident. Adam Curry was kind enough to sit down and talk to us a little bit. This guy's fascinated me. He's got all kinds of projects going on. To me, I say he's the Elon Musk meets Ray Kurzweil. I mean, he's just got all kinds of different projects that he's involved in. We're going to talk about a few of those today. Mostly, we want to talk about consciousness. Let's just start off right there. What do you think consciousness is? How do you define consciousness? And let's start there.
Well, I appreciate you opening with easy questions. Softball.
Exactly. What is consciousness?
Well, so the word consciousness means different things to different people. So if you're a scientist, you ask this question, what is consciousness? What you mean is, what is the nature of consciousness? Where do our thoughts come from, our first-person experience, our subjective states?
Right.
That's an ontological question. What is consciousness? Now, for the general population, consciousness means something very different. It kind of means something like mindfulness or conscientiousness or...
Conscientiousness is what I think
people
think consciousness
that's right.
means, but it's not.
Yeah, it's more on the dimension, I guess, of spirituality. So you expand your consciousness as you allow new ideas and possibilities to enter your, and that's great and so forth. My sort of background, to the extent that I have one, is in the scientific study of the nature of consciousness. But I actually think that when investigated, actually is much more interesting than the expand your consciousness and conscientiousness and mindfulness stuff.
Agreed. Now, there are some people that believe that our brains, that consciousness exists outside the body and our brains are just sort of like a receiver and the FM station's out there and we do. Do you believe that is how consciousness is? Or do you think consciousness exists within each of our minds?
Well, so
another easy one.
Yeah. You know, humans, we tend to think about abstract concepts and metaphors, and the metaphors that we use are often things like sort of physics-based or frequency-based things that we're familiar with. So, if we're vibing, we'd say like, oh, we're on the same wavelength,
right?
So we have these like metaphorical language that we use to describe these. And so the example that you gave is similar. And it's kind of this idea that consciousness or our minds might not be strictly contained or produced by the brain, but rather filtered by the brain from some sort of more fundamental field of whatever, right?
Possibly the Akashic record, even.
Some call it that.
Yeah.
You know, there's like, again, different, different words for this. And there's a number of reasons why people think that. But so we'll make this simple. We'll give like two perspectives, right? So the perspective that would be given to you by the mainstream experts up until recently has been that consciousness is an illusion, meaning who you are, your thoughts, your feelings, the whole world of your experiences, they're not real. They're an epiphenomena, an illusion produced by the brain.
They're what we interpret them to be.
That's right. And so we've kind of gone along this path for some time because it goes back to this thing called materialism, which is this kind of framework that scientists use to understand the world. Everything is physical matter. Something that isn't physical matter doesn't exist, right? So the brain is something that we can see, and that's been fine, but this perspective on consciousness is kind of falling apart. And even mainstream consciousness researchers, philosophers, they know it. The writing's on the wall. And it's falling apart because, well, really for three reasons, I think.
Okay.
The first reason is that if you say consciousness is an illusion, the question becomes an illusion to whom, right? So you need consciousness to experience anything, including illusions. Right, so that's a problem. That's
this
a huge.
It's whole Elon Musk thing that we're living just in a matrix,
yeah,
and it's not even real.
Well, that's right. I mean, even if you're in a simulation, you can't say that consciousness is not real because you're still experiencing the simulation.
Right.
Right.
Exactly. That's exactly that you put well.
So you can't get behind consciousness. Okay, and so then maybe if we dig deeper in the sort of study of neuroimaging and neurocorrelates of consciousness, that we're going to find consciousness in the brain. Fair enough, but we've done fantastic work in brain mapping, like really, really good MRI and other types of methods, and we've come no closer to finding consciousness in the brain. In fact, we're further away than ever we thought because we still can't explain why the phenomena of subjectivity should be attendant to brain functioning at all, meaning if consciousness was just a phenomena of the electrical and neuro firing in neurons. You could just have some neurons firing in a petri dish.
And so we could replicate that in a computer even or whatever.
Yeah, sure. And maybe there is consciousness inside, but why? Why is there? And we have no idea. And so the third kind of way in which this perspective on sort of local illusionary consciousness is failing is what's called psi research. And that's often conflated with parapsychology, but it's really more like seeing if the brain or the mind can do anything that is beyond what it should be able to do. ESP, psychokinesis, telepathy. Basically, there's this whole class of experiments, really good experiments going back about 50 years, looking at consciousness's ability to do things that it ain't supposed to do, right? And a number of those experiments that have been repeated by reputable labs and all that kind of stuff are actually really quite robust and telling.
And yeah, we've done that. We've had people on about the dice, where they do the dice so many times, and then they all consciously try to think of altering the dice and maybe do, maybe not.
Right.
In controlled lab studies.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, so on the psychokinesis side, which you're talking about, it's not like spoon bending or anything, but it's small shifts in physical probabilities that end up becoming statistically significant.
And exactly. Yeah. That's exactly right.
So for all of these reasons, the idea that our mind is, you know, some sort of illusion is falling apart. And we don't exactly know where we're going from here, meaning we still don't know what consciousness is, but we know what it's not, right? And what it's not is the illusion. What it is might be the metaphor that you opened with, which is that kind of like a TV set, if you were to look at the screen on a TV set and you see the picture, the TV set is the brain and the picture is the experience, it would be wrong to try to look for, you know, the little actor or whatever inside the TV set.
Right, exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly.
It's filtering it from some sort of, you know, non-physical, unseen frequency, you know, whatever. And so if you damage the TV set, the picture doesn't come through. So if you were to cut off part of the brain, you eliminate the filtering part of the brain with that kind of experience. So, like, metaphorically, you kind of see what we're getting at. And there's actually some really, really good work happening right now, very much in line with that perspective, a couple of from different angles. They don't necessarily agree with each other, but they're both really, really good work. Stuart Hameroff and Roger Penrose have a theory called ORC-OR, so orchestrated collapse, orchestrated reduction, basically. So I won't get too much into it, but basically it's this idea that there are these structures in all of our cells called microtubules, and they're like room temperature quantum devices that are connected to some sort of like more extended information field. And as our brain collapses quantum probabilities, that produces something like consciousness. So it's different from the idea that consciousness collapses the wave function. It's actually consciousness is the collapse of the wave function.
Wow.
And that really opens the door to a lot of non-local thinking about the nature of our minds.
You know, we've had like Dr. Long, some of these near-death experience guys, and they talk about some of the people that die, they feel they suddenly have all the knowledge of the universe like downloaded to them instantly. So that kind of supports that idea of it being out there, and then they sort of get it too.
Yeah.
You know, that's an interesting bit of evidence.
Mm-hmm. Christoph Koch and others have really embraced what's called panpsychism, just this idea that consciousness is actually the fundamental structure of reality, right?
So we wouldn't know any of this if we didn't have consciousness. It's so hard to...
Yeah, you can't get behind it.
Right, it's so hard to... How would we know if we didn't have consciousness? We wouldn't be able to experience questioning whether or not we have consciousness.
That's right.
It's you know, and then there's the other question of what has consciousness? Is it just humans?
Mm.
Is it all life forms? You know, where is that line? Is another.
That is one of the questions.
Yeah.
In fact, the panpsychist world, they deal with that question a lot. So, let's say that you think of like matter is actually consciousness in a way, but it's not conscious. It's like proto consciousness, meaning it has the constituents that could be arranged into complexity that produces some higher order thing that either is consciousness or allows consciousness to sort of come through.
And you can wonder how far back humans or whatever came before us, whatever hominid, when did they become conscious? You know, would you say when they were an ape?
Yeah.
Were we conscious?
Well, so my perspective is that there isn't a...
Did day.
Well, there isn't a day, but there also isn't this sort of like punctuated moment, this like invisible equator that you cross where all of a sudden you go from not conscious to conscious.
Maybe there's degrees of it?
It's a spectrum.
Grayscale.
Yeah, it's a spectrum. And so the question then becomes, how do you get from low spectrum consciousness, like let's say, you know, just rote material, a rock, something like that, to high spectrum consciousness, animals, like that kind of thing. And you look at how those are different. And one way in which they're different is that we have things called like a nervous system. Our biology at that level is highly self-integrated, extraordinarily self-integrated. So you have these recursive kind of self-integrated loops. You look at the brain more from a structural perspective as a filtering device. And that is something that is different in terms of fundamentally how it's organized than something like a rock. So the degree of like sort of complexity and organizing, the mortal vehicle or the corpus that the consciousness is attendant to might have something to do with how much consciousness comes through.
Yeah, that's interesting. Okay, so where are we at now? Like, how does that affect with technology, let's say?
Yeah. Well, I don't really know many other people that are doing this, but for me, I'm quite satisfied with the outcomes of the Psi research experiments with consciousness being non-local. That tells me that there's so much more that there is to learn just about what is the mechanism by which consciousness interacts with the physical world. And while we don't fundamentally understand it, but I think we're getting there, we do know enough about it to maybe create new types of technology. So you can think of if consciousness is non-local or extended, then it might be able to interact with technology in a new way.
Well, this is also where they talk about maybe a computer and or we could download that person into a computer someday, and you could still experience them to some degree because they maybe are, if it's non-local, then that should still exist. Mm-hmm. And if you downloaded all your experiences to a computer, there's been a lot of talk about that recently. Yeah. That in theory we could download ourselves to a computer. You would have that. You could still talk to your mother, almost indistinguishable from the user. Right. To the. It's an interesting.
So. That is super interesting, and actually it's that possibility, I think, that gets at the question of what consciousness actually is.
Right.
Candidly, I'm a bit skeptical of the whole idea that we can download our, like, who we are, basically.
I join you with that,
yeah.
Too.
Okay.
I still don't think that that's possible.
To say nothing of whether you should.
But like, right.
Yeah.
Right.
Like, as a thought experiment, you can imagine building a robot, okay? And so this robot starts off looking like 1950s sort of janky robot. But slowly over time, you start making it look more and more like a human. So its outer visage becomes much, much like a human being, right? And to the point where it's indistinguishable. It looks just like one of us.
Sure.
Then you could say, okay, well, we're going to create something like...
And they're close to that already.
Yeah.
I've seen, you know...
Yeah, yeah.
In Japan, they've got robots that look like a girl, and it freaks you out.
That's right.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then you could say, okay, well, we're going to turn our attention to the inside of the robot, and we're going to, like, build things like muscles and build things like bones, and then... As technology advances, we're going to build things like neurons. We're going to start connecting them in all the ways that our own neurons are connected so that you rebuild, basically, mechanically, some sort of biological robot that is sort of, on the surface level, indistinguishable from us. So now, does that have an interiority? Does that have is there a light on inside versus a light? And so that's a thought experiment, so we don't really know. But if we could do that Well, I actually have an idea of how you could test that. Whether or not you could know that the light on is upstairs, like there's a light on upstairs or consciousness is there with some like highly advanced robot, is if it can pass psi tests.
Yeah, but I wonder if it really is just maybe programmed to be able to pass psi tests, or could it really? You know, like, mm-hmm. like they say it'll be indistinguishable, but it still doesn't mean that it really is. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Even just because it's indistinguishable to me, the novice interacting with it,
yeah.
doesn't mean it really does, has achieved consciousness.
Well, that's true. So my perspective on that is sort of real consciousness that's not just pretending to be awake.
Right.
If something is truly conscious, then it is connected to everyone and everything. It is deriving its consciousness in some part from the fabric of physical reality itself. So... Like, at some deep level, I believe that we're connected, and that we're connected to, say, every other person or every other consciousness and sort of all points in space and time.
Sure.
Right? And I think that's kind of a operational definition of consciousness. It's that is the source from which consciousness springs, if you will, to get metaphysical. And if that robot can do things that, for example, if it can like affect the output of a random number generator, or it can effectively participate in psi experiments, then I would be willing to say that it's joined the family of consciousness. If it isn't, then it's just a very convincing duplicate.
Right, which is, I think, what it would always be. Mm-hmm. Just inherently, at my gut level, I feel it'll, that would be the best we could get.
That's right.
Like, you could never truly be conscious. And there has been, I know you're sort of outside the UFO community and the alien world, but you're just on the fringe of coming to these conferences. We've seen you at several lately. But Tony and I have gone a ton of these, and there are people that think that, you know, both aliens are this way. Mm-hmm. That they number one, they come here for our soul and or consciousness because they don't have that. And there's ideas that they say that some of these people think that the gray aliens are in fact robotic and are in fact not biological. That maybe that's what they send out because it takes years to get here. Well, they just send those things. That's one of the schools of thought in the subculture.
Yeah, as far as like wild speculation goes, I think that that's perfectly reasonable to think. Like, if you're a highly technologically advanced being, you don't
send yourself. You send a robot.
You don't send yourself, especially on dangerous things. You send a robot, and particularly you send some sort of robot that can do very precise types of things, but that the lights are not up, for whom the lights are not up on stairs. Like, they're not conscious. Put it that way. And so if it's sort of not conscious by these ways, these like advanced ET ways, hypothetically, in which you could measure this, then if you were to send like the biological robot of the gray to do your work, then maybe it's not, there's no downside for it.
It makes sense. It would follow your orders. Right. It's not truly conscious, but it's close to replicating conscious.
Exactly.
Makes sense.
Yeah, makes sense.
So that's a strong... So let's talk a little bit about this Entangled, this mobile app you have, mm-hmm. that we could all download. Let's talk about mm-hmm. that.
Yeah. So Entangled is a mobile app. You download it, and it turns your phone into a physical random number generator. Okay. So why is that important? Well, there's many decades of research that shows that the output of otherwise perfectly random physical systems, like random number generators, tends to be shifted when we're consciously interacting with it. Meaning you could ask somebody to attempt to nudge the output of the random number generator.
Or like there's a world event. Isn't it like at 9/11, these things spiked, that kind of thing, right? When there's a global earthquake or something.
Yeah, that's right. So out of that research grew a project called the Global Consciousness Project, which said, okay, we're going to take 70 of these random number generators, we're going to spread them around the world, and we're going to collect data from them 24/7. And then when big events happen, we're going to just look at the data and see if there's any mean shift. If they all behave, they go from
less random.
Yeah, from random to less random, right? So if there's more order injected in the system. And if so, is that evidence of some sort of global consciousness, right? So.
Right, even if it does work, does that actually equate to there being a global consciousness?
That is the question.
That is the question.
Yeah. And there's like different ways to unpack that.
Yeah.
So. My perspective is that we don't know if it's global consciousness or not. We do know that there are significant, statistically significant anomalies that do occur, meaning the network of random number generators definitely behave as though they're more ordered and structured when events happen that catalyze mass attention.
Like
9/11, right. For example. In fact, it even happened a little bit before.
Right, hours leading up to it, right?
That's right.
That's how we knew.
It's sort of pre-sentiment effect. So the question is it the... is it like an experimenter effect from all the people involved that are shifting it, and it just looks like it's a mass consciousness effect, or is it mass consciousness? And like we're never going to know the answer to that. But my response is that it doesn't really matter, because that shows you how to build something that's the next stage, which is that you create, like, if you intend to download an app and use it to respond to events that are meaningful to you, and you put all of that together over enough data points, then you're actually looking at something that is like mass consciousness. Maybe not global consciousness, but if you've got 100,000 or 200,000 users, you're looking at how consciousness is dynamically sort of affecting some system in which you're kind of in resonance with or connected to, basically.
Okay, so if everybody downloads this app to their phone, is this all this data going to some computer you have somewhere? And so it's like, it's not like they're going to experience anything necessarily on their phone, right, locally. This is more about
Well,
being part of this program.
It's about being part of this program. Mm-hmm. You could think of it as like SETI for consciousness.
Right.
So you think the SETI program, you know,
So the more people you have, the more data you have to see what they right.
That's yeah. It's not like I'm not in the business of trying to convince anyone of anything. I am in the business of asking interesting questions and in the business of mad science and having fun.
Yeah, you certainly are. Yeah, I remember my friends used to have a screensaver that would do this thing, and it was like somehow they were tapped into, I don't know, MIT or something, where they were working on a math program and they were just doing this little thing, just their screensaver. That's similar to what you want to do. You want all the people to sign up for this thing, and they'll all have a random number generator, and that way you have more data to call.
That's exactly right. Yeah, you can think of it as in these complex problems like SETI and solving various like hard computer problems, to have a single computer with the computing power to sort of number crunch that is complex and expensive.
Sure.
However, if you were to allow a million users to lend their own computing power to solving the problem, you actually get there much faster and much cheaper. And so we're kind of asking people to lend their consciousness to the bigger question of what is consciousness? What is consciousness itself ontologically? What can it do? And how does consciousness perhaps interact with other consciousnesses to create some sort of like network effects in consciousness? And you can actually pose, that's an interesting question. That's not really a scientific question, but you can pose better scientific questions, meaning like predictive questions.
Yeah.
If there are events that meet certain criteria, some earthquake in some region, will we see some mean shift that is, you know, statistically significant to X degree? Like, you know, you can phrase it more scientifically, right?
Sure.
And I want to do all of those things.
Yeah, I love it. And I love that it's not like just this, it's a genuine, it's coming from a good place. Like
sure.
You're really trying to get a good answer to move things forward, not just sell something. You know what I mean? Like there's a noble thing behind this. It's called Entangled. We want to make sure we get that. Okay, I want to ask you the big question that I ask a lot of people, because it's the one phenomenon in here that I truly, truly have experienced and truly feel a strong connection with, and that's synchronicity. Mm-hmm. And I've heard you speak on synchronicity, and I really want to get your thoughts on the synchronicity mm-hmm. phenomenon. It happens to me so often and so profoundly, I can't even begin to tell you.
Synchronicity is cool, man.
It's amazing. Like,
yeah.
It makes me literally go, like, holy, it's happened this week. It's just
yeah.
craziness.
Well, I think synchronicity is often something that most people, it's their closest and most palpable experience of consciousness being something more than an illusion, of there's some being some sort of connection between what's going on in here, your thoughts, your feelings, your moods, your intention, and what happens to you in the external world. You know, you're thinking about somebody that you haven't heard from in a long time, and yeah, they give you a phone call, or you run into
or way more obscure. You and I will talk about something that I never heard of, and then I flip on my phone, and the Yahoo top story is about that. It's like, come
yeah.
on!
Right.
Now, are they listening to me? Did they know? You know, it's
mm-hmm.
just it's so hard to believe sometimes.
Yeah, well, that's the fun in it, because there's sort of all these ways in which you could be like more credulous about these things. Like, oh, it's well, the odds of that are actually like within the realm of chance, and you're just paying attention to. And sure, but sometimes not, right?
So it can't be.
Yeah.
It feels like it can't be. Sure, it could be a coincidence, but it feels so astronomically impossible.
Yeah.
That it's coincidence is one thing that happens all the time. Synchronicity is like a million times that and way more implausible.
So, you know, what do the experiments tell you about the reality of something like synchronicity? And there's actually a kind of an interesting way to look differently at this. The Jungian operational definition of synchronicity was the ability of the mind to bring together two otherwise random or unconnected events in some meaningful way. Okay. Well, what we saw in the laboratory, the PEAR lab, that studied the influence of consciousness on random physical systems, is that our minds tend to have a much stronger organizing effect on random physical systems when it's meaningful for us to do so.
Hmm.
Okay. So what is meaningful? Well, if you're excited about doing the experiment, generally you get good results. If you're bored, you know, sitting in a boring old lab, you get no results, basically. You know, if getting a good result or a good outcome of the experiment is important to you for some other reason, chances are you're going to get that. You might think of like a lot of scientific experiments outside of this realm as being the scientists themselves hoping for a meaningful result and actually kind of nudging the odds in their favor.
Yeah.
Might explain something like what's called the decline effect, where the second and third time that you do something, the results decline. And that's actually this huge problem that no one really talks about in science, is the results across the board in various disciplines.
Because the first time you want it so bad.
That's right, yeah.
Then you get it, and then it's like, oh, well, we already got it.
Yeah, it becomes less meaningful. And
right. That's almost like that Heisenberg thing where if you look at it, it goes through the hole, and if it doesn't,
yeah.
If you don't look at it, it didn't happen.
Right.
I mean, it's almost like that.
Yeah, for sure. I'll give you an example.
Please.
Of this is an unpublished study, but it was done at the Pear Lab, I think, probably 15 years ago.
Okay.
We called it plant reg. Basically, you have a houseplant, and the houseplant is in a room with no windows. Okay, and you put it in one corner. Up at the top of the room, you have a light, like a growing light. And there's a motor on it, and the direction of the light is controlled by the random number generator. So it will shine in this quadrant, or that quadrant, an equal amount of times, right? So the plant needs the light to shine on it for it to grow, right? It's meaningful.
He's going to blow my mind if the thing, go ahead.
Yeah, well, you see where I'm going.
No, of course.
You do this experiment, and over enough time, the light is shining in that quadrant towards the plant far more often than it should by chance, right?
Wow, see, that's nuts.
Simple experiment, profound to unpack the implications, because it tells me, anyway, that life, in a very, very basic way, consciousness in the plant, what it does is it nudges the odds of the physical world in its direction to promote its growth.
You're not even talking about a human being. You're talking
about
just a plant,
yeah,
is able to affect the random number generator enough to make it more frequently shine on itself.
I mean, I think that's what life does, is life consciousness. You could think of think of it this way. Biology might be a technology of consciousness.
Wow.
Yeah. So sort of non-physical consciousness, whatever that is in the driver's seat when it comes to evolution.
It certainly shows you that there's more than our basic 3D world that people think.
Yeah.
Just that alone, if that's in fact true, that this light shines more often than that. And we've heard different things about guys who freeze water and they talk nice to the water, or they screamed at the water and they freeze it and it comes out differently. Mm-hmm. That's water.
Mm-hmm.
How's our consciousness in there?
Yeah, I mean, consciousness is interacting with random processes inside the water, right? So, you know, there's when it comes to the sort of evolutionary biology conundrum of how did life evolve, the odds against chance of biological life evolving, I think it's called abiogenesis, like how you get sort of life from
nothing,
from right, less complex things. So the on the creationist side, they say, well, it's unlikely on the order of 10 to the 390th, which is crazy astronomical. So to put that in perspective, the number of atoms in the known universe is like 10 to the 80.
Okay.
So the creationist guys
it's
are
more
like,
likely than all the atoms in the universe.
Right. Well, it's unlikely that,
more, right,
that
right,
it would
right,
come.
Right.
And so the evolutionary biologists who don't like the creationists are like, no. It's actually more like 10 to the 40th. Right.
Which
is like, I don't like those odds, right?
Right, right.
And those odds are really crazy. But then you say, okay, that's just the biology side. What about all of the physical constants in the universe that have to be just so mathematically in order for life to exist? There's like 22 different constants, like the gravitational constant and the ratio of the mass of the proton. Like all these things are just like bizarrely perfectly tuned to life, and that would have had to have happened in the moment of the Big Bang. So then what are the odds of that? And you're like, well, I don't know. So so like the mainstream way around this is, we live in this many worlds universe where there's like gazillion different realities.
Oh,
we just happen to be in the one with life. It's possible, but it's not.
And
really,
or that could happen and life evolved to fit there.
Well, so that would make sense, provided you allow consciousness to be a real thing that nudges the probabilities around. So really, like, I think most people in this how did life evolve question are kind of stuck between the creationist argument, which requires God, and a lot of people don't want to go there, or this like infinite universes in which we just happen to live in the one, which is not parsimonious, or the way that nature effectively and efficiently deals with things.
Which seems highly right. implausible to most people.
I know, and I don't like any of those. Right. So it's like, so guys.
Give me a third option, right?
Consciousness. Yeah. Like, if you have consciousness nudging probabilities, all of a sudden it's not 10 to the 390th, nor is it 10 to the 40th, but it's actually, this is just what consciousness does. Yeah. Consciousness brings together things in the physical world.
But now they'll say, maybe God created that consciousness.
Yeah.
You're opening up that now, too.
What is God, right? I mean, maybe God is the consciousness. Yeah, who knows?
Holy cannabis discussion here.
I know.
Holy truth be told, right? I mean, it's nuts. Well, listen, I want to let you get out of here, but so do you have a synchronicity? What is your take on synchronicity? What do you think in your life, what does that mean to you?
Well, so I can talk about what I think it is as like a science-y
outside
person.
Outside of the lab thing, just
outside
you
of the lab, for me, synchronicity is my personal goalpost. It's synchronicity is I relate to it as some part of me bringing things together to show me the way. So
when you experience a synchronicity, that tells you personally that you're on the right path.
That's right.
I've had other people say something similar to that.
Yeah, I mean, I relate to it that way. Yeah. And it's consistent with how I think of it sort of like as a science-y person too. As consciousness is bringing together otherwise random things in a way that is meaningful to it. So there's, you know, just getting away from just basic survival, there's also growth. There's personal growth and there's adventure and there's all these amazing things that are out there for us.
Yeah.
And, you know, when you start to sort of open up and wake up and follow these paths, synchronicities typically increase for people, certainly have for me.
Me too, as well, absolutely.
And I think if you pay attention to that, some deep part of you is going to lead you exactly where you need to go.
There you go. It's that simple. Listen, why don't you guys all download Entangled, right? Entangled, the app. Help this guy out. I think he's doing great stuff. Adam, appreciate you coming on the show.
My pleasure.
Really nice talking to you. For Tony Sweet, I am Captain Ron here at the 50th anniversary of the MUFON Symposium. For Truth Be Told, we'll see you next time.